Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Karma You podcast. This is your host, Chloe Brotheridge. I'm a coach, a hypnotherapist, and I'm the author of The Anxiety Solution and Brave New Girl. And this podcast is all about helping you to become your calmest, happiest, and most confident self. Hello, hello. Welcome, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today. I had such a good conversation with Emma Campbell. You might know her as Limitless Em over on Instagram. And I've followed Emma for a while. I've been really inspired by her story, by her attitude to things. She's got so much to share and so much to teach. And she is such a brilliant storyteller. I loved hearing of her experiences. Now, Emma is a mum of triplets. She's also got an older son as well. She first got diagnosed with cancer when her triplets were just babies, and she shares her story of managing, struggling, you know, the things that she's learned through her experiences with the uncertainty and the anxiety of going through cancer treatment over the years. And she just shares so beautifully about the things that have helped her, the ways that she struggled with things, how she stays positive and how she stays grateful. There's so much for us to learn from Emma's story and Emma's experience. So I also want to invite you to join me over on my website. I am blogging again. Do you remember blogs? Do you still read blogs? I've decided to write some blogs. I've got all sorts on there. And you can head over to my website, karma-you.com. I've got freebies on there as well, free anxiety toolkit. You'll find that at karma-you.com/free. There are worksheets, an affirmations MP3, a hypnotherapy MP3 that you can download that I think, I'm confident, will help you to feel calmer within minutes, within literal minutes of listening to it. So hope you can get benefit from that. And yeah, let's get into the interview with Emma Campbell.
So welcome, Emma. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here and it's beautiful and sunny, so that feels good.
Amazing. Can you share a little bit about your story and how you got to where you are today? Sure.
So I guess my kind of the thrust of my story began in 2010 when I was diagnosed with breast cancer as a single mum to baby triplets and their big brother who was 6 and a half. I'd also recently split up from their father, so it was an incredibly challenging time, huge life events all happening within weeks and months of each other. So that was the kind of 11 years on now. I look back over the last decade and it's kind of quite hard to connect with all that's gone on and all that I've been through. And I guess, you know, all that I've come through as well. Those early years dealing with the diagnosis, the treatment, the surgery, looking after the babies, managing all the kind of ongoing drama were sort of terrifying and very, very challenging. But the kind of the hardest bit throughout it all was, you know, once I got my all clear from my first diagnosis as a breast cancer patient, the emotional side of it was just sort of fairly torturous. I spent a long time living as though I was dying, even though to all intents and purposes, I'd been told that I was, you know, as clear could be cancer-wise. So that sort of turned into a very limiting sort of fairly agonizing way to live, if I'm honest. I got my secondary diagnosis at the end of 2014, just as life was beginning to turn a corner. You know, I really felt like I'd kind of almost cracked it. The babies had grown up, starting reception. I was nearly at the 5-year clear, and I really started to feel like my life was opening up again. So that was an absolutely kind of blindsiding shock. And again, even more at that point, the fear of death, the fear of what I decided was an imminent death, even though, again, I hadn't been told that at any point, just seemed to consume me. And then 2 years ago, I was diagnosed for the third time. So I've been on ongoing cancer treatment for 6 years now. I have targeted chemo every 3 weeks, and I'm doing well. I'm in remission. Things are really stable. And I feel strong and well. But it's taken so many years for me to get to a place where I have found a way of managing my anxiety and how I live with an ongoing chronic situation alongside life, you know, all of the other stuff, the mum stuff, the relationships, the, you know, all of it. So so it's something I'm passionate about sharing, you know, through my writing, through my speaking, sort of showing and just by sharing some of what helps me, I guess. I really hope that I can help others in some tiny way and help myself too along the way.
Yeah, gosh, that's amazing. And, you know, for anyone, you know, just having triplets, that would be such a, you know, hugely challenging thing, let alone having those health issues as well. And yeah. I know that your Instagram handle is LimitlessM. And so you mentioned before about feeling really limited, you know, so kind of moving through into becoming limitless. Can you say a bit about
that's
that?
Yeah, definitely. Because that was my handle, you know, in my very sort of inactive social media was M+4, because I was Emma with the babies, you know, with the kids. Oh, M with the four kids. So, you know, I was M+4. And then, you know, I changed the handle just around the time of my third diagnosis, so 2019. And just around that time, it all kind of, I was building up, I'd hit my rock bottom a couple of years before that. And I was just sort of slowly, painfully, but bit by bit, finding a way of managing, you know, the ongoing sort of mental torment that I put myself through. And when the third diagnosis came, it was a really pivotal point. And like, you know, there's a story about that, but it was a kind of a real mindset shift. And so changing my handle to LimitlessM coincided with me finally kind of stepping into a new way of thinking. And actually, not just a new way of thinking, because I'd always been on a sort of self-development path, but actually finding a way of putting those beliefs that I'd always read about into practice, actually walking the talk, I guess, you know. So the LimitlessM handle was very much not so much, oh God, look at me, I'm so limitless. It was more like a daily affirmation. It was like a reminder to myself, because I fundamentally believe that we all are limitless and we all have incredible limitless potential. So it really was a kind of reminder to me and reminder to anyone that fundamentally we are all limitless, even if we're not feeling it. So by no means do I, you know, I'm not permanently in a state of limitless thinking, but I always try and come back to that.
I love that as an affirmation to, you know, to remind ourselves, you know, if we are going through something challenging, that I think you talk about this on your Instagram, we're so much more than we think we are, and we have so many more resources than we think we do.
Yes.
It's really inspiring. Can you say a bit about, you know, what's it been like being the mum of triplets, you know, that kind of someone that doesn't have children yet and wants to be a mum soon, you know, that, you know, sounds very overwhelming.
It is overwhelming, and it's always been overwhelming. I mean, they're miracle, you know, wonderful babies that are now 11 and a half year old children who just started secondary school. They came about, I mean, I'd had my eldest son, who come about sort of very quickly and easily, but not without drama, which I won't launch into now, but the pregnancy was very difficult with him. And I caught a flesh eating bug after having him. So I sort of nearly died after I had him. It was pretty horrendous. So, but he was, you know, I really did just sort of fall in love with him. And he was just, you know, my boy and my kind of, you know, the center of everything. And the relationship was quite sort of up and down and quite volatile. So Jake, my oldest son, really just was my little sidekick. But, you know, we started trying for a second baby when Jake was about 2.5 and nothing happened. And it took nearly 4 years to conceive. And in that time, I had recurrent miscarriages. And the obsession for what I thought would be one more baby sort of grew and grew and grew. And so the longing, the desire, the all-consuming kind of need to complete what I thought my vision of a family was, because I really feel that everyone has, whether it's one child, two, often depending on what they grew up with, you know, for me, it was kind of two children. That's what I'd experienced. And that would be my idea of my family complete. And no one can tell you when you're in the grip of that longing for a baby. And I just sort of described it in my book as almost like my womb was bullying me, because I couldn't rationalize these desires. They were so they dominated everything. And, you know, it was very tough on my relationship. It was a distraction from any other part of life. But anyway, so we eventually embarked on IVF, and we had one round of IVF, and obviously it worked. At the first scan, we were told that we had twins. So, you know, they two strong heartbeats, twin one, twin two. And it was like, okay, we can just about do this. And then had, as a result of the IVF, we were given lots of regular scans, twin one, twin two, twin one, twin two. And then we got to the 5 month, 20 week scan, which is the big one. And suddenly, you know, the room had gone very quiet, and little Theo was discovered hiding away. So I didn't find out I was having triplets until I was 5 months pregnant. So that really upped the ante of everything. You know, it really took kind of what was already quite a, oh my God, okay, we can do this. You know, we're living in a two bedroom flat, but don't worry, we'll find a way to kind of, gosh, this, you know, this is very unexpected. Anyway, yeah, three babies are born, healthy, well, absolute miracle. And I look at them every day and can't quite believe that they're here. But I'd also be lying if I said it hasn't been incredibly challenging, incredibly difficult. I mean, even in as a co-parenting, you know, those early days of newborn triplets, feeding, you know, three babies, three tiny babies, they were born 8 weeks early, they were feeding every two and a half hours, and each feed would take about 2 hours. So if you can imagine it, there was just no sleep. And it was constant. And they were all, by that point, my partner and me were on the cusp of separating. So there were three Moses baskets around, and it was just a relentless blur of day after day. But alongside that, unfortunately, I was also very aware of changes in my breast, but I was ignoring them because there was so much drama going on. There was so much sort of fatigue and survive, you know, I was already in that kind of survival mode, just putting one foot in front of the other. When they were 6 months old, I was diagnosed. So that just took everything to a whole new level. So it really was, I look back at those times and it's quite painful still for me to look back at those early days, because the tragedy is I wanted them so desperately and they came and they were well and thriving. But I felt, where was the joy? Where was the time to actually, you know, connect and just enjoy their existence? It really was, on a very practical level, it was just go, 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 go. But also on an emotional level, my head was so absorbed with all the other stuff that was going on. But, you know, and they were handed around. There was a lot of, you know, wonderful, I live in a busy part of London, but that incredible feeling of community when I was diagnosed and when I became a single mum, that everyone from distant neighbours to old school friends, everyone rallied around, and kind of there's a lot of baby passing around going on. You know, one friend driving me to chemo, another friend walking one baby around the common, another friend, you know, feeding another baby. It was very, very practical at all times. So even now, it's kind of, I still now, it's only quite rarely that I catch a moment where I think, oh, this is a calm moment. This is a moment where we're all together and everything's okay and there's a feeling of peace. How wonderful. And I try and really bank it. But still, if I'm honest, you know, there's a lot of chaos, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of fighting. We're a very noisy, loud, competitive, you know, door slamming and fighting over who had the biggest bit of everything, you know, but they're wonderful. They're a gift, but it's full on.
Yeah, sounds amazing. And yeah, I'm glad you had that community around you in North London and people around. I know, you know, so many people, I mean, I've just decided to move back to my hometown to be closer to my parents so that if I hopefully have a baby, then I'm having that kind of support, because I just, yeah, I can imagine it's so difficult. I mean, it's difficult anyway, but without sort of support, I imagine really, really difficult. So,
I can't, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine things feeling harder than they felt, but the idea of me not having had, even though I was going through a very difficult time with the breakup, the knowing that at the end of the phone or around the corner, there were often, if I'm on it, women, you know, amazing kind of community of women in particular, you know, that really held me up, which is priceless.
Can you talk a bit about how, you know, what were some of the things that helped you to cope, you know, when things were really challenging, you know, through the uncertainty and
honestly at that time I don't feel like there was much that helped emotionally. I mean, physically everyone did what they could to give me rest, so I would get the odd night where it would be arranged that I could get a full night's sleep, or very, very, very occasionally I'd take my eldest son away to my best friends for one or two nights just to get a little bit of, it was kind of like respite, and the babies were tiny and, you know, they were fine. But emotionally, there was a long period of time where it didn't really feel like anything helped, because having come through the cancer, I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to put it somewhere. And, you know, it's something that's talked about a lot, that often when the treatment ends, that really is when the kind of the tough phase begins in terms of your recovery, because you're kind of, as my oncologist described it, you can feel very lost at sea. You know, you've left that sort of safe, very scheduled cocoon of a chemotherapy ward or dates in your diary and a whole schedule of treatment, everyone focusing on you. And then life, you know, your hair grows back, you start getting a physical, energetic spring in your step again, but actually inside you're kind of, why aren't I feeling like the luckiest person alive? I'm here. Why am I? And so I look back, and that's why, again, you know, the idea of being able to share any of what I've learned has helped me now to someone who's newly diagnosed just feels so important, because I didn't seem to be able to find any relief back then. And as my journey has gone on with the kind of, you know, first diagnosis, second, third, I've just slowly but surely sort of cobbled together a bit of a toolbox, an emotional toolbox that I draw on, and my kind of, I guess I've got my small handful of, you know, go-to, whether it's a belief, whether it's a practice, whether it's the running, whether it's the kind of, you know, coming from a place of gratitude. It's slowly but surely, and it doesn't, and I still struggle, you know, I still find going to the hospital every 3 weeks, even on the best days where it feels routine and I know that I'm not going to hear anything or I'm not expecting any news, it's never easy, but I found a way, I guess. And a lot of that is based on also having become part of the most incredible online community and seeing how other patients and survivors and lifelong secondary patients live and cope and manage. And that's probably been the fundamental, that was the start of the turnaround for me, I think, because before that, before I stepped into the online world, I was completely on my own in my head with it, because I didn't know anyone else and I didn't want to go online. I didn't want to walk into a support group in a building somewhere. I didn't want to be connected with, like, oh, and I've got a friend who, I didn't want that. I didn't want to hear anyone else's stories. I was too scared. But the thing that I found about, you know, Instagram in particular is that I've been able to step into that world in a way that suited me. So initially sort of tentatively, sort of from the out, you know, from the sidelines, and then bit by bit kind of stepping in, speaking up, other people speaking about their vulnerability. And it's just been the most incredible kind of melting pot of love and support and a shared vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all at different stages where we've all got, you know, different ways of coping. We've all got different words written on a medical report that may or may not dictate our future, but there will always be a shared language that virtually just by a like or a little message on a DM or watching someone's stories, you just think, oh, okay, you know, I can do that too. Or I feel like that too today.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. Do you think there are a lot of people who are going through cancer who don't have access to a community or don't, you know, like you, maybe it's too scary to go to the support group or to follow other people?
I think there must be. I mean, I think for me, like 11 years ago, I don't feel like I look back even as a mum and I think, gosh, all these, you know, if, you know, when you have your little one, you know, there'll be a new parent community that, you know, you might be feeding a baby in the middle of the night and you might go online, you know, and see someone else. And I look back now even as a mum and think, God, how amazing would that have been, you know, 18 years ago when Jake was born, to know that, you know, in those sleepless nights. And I think, so I, in my world, I think, well, gosh, everyone's got access to that now, regardless of their age, but not, it isn't for everybody. Obviously social media isn't for everybody at all. So, and I hate to think of anyone sort of struggling on their own, feeling that, whether it's a geographical isolation or a mental and emotional isolation. All I do know is that this community is growing and growing and growing. And unfortunately, because more and more people are getting diagnosed, but it's an enormous community. So whether or not you want to be an active part of it or whether you just want to take the little bits that help you, it's there. And I would really, really, you know, gently suggest for someone who's newly diagnosed, when they're ready, to just even just, you know, anonymously from behind, you know, from the comfort of an account that they don't have to share anything, but just to kind of observe how other people are managing, because we've all got so much that we can share with each other, and it's transformative, I think.
This episode of the Karma You podcast is sponsored by my online course, Your Calmest Self. It's a course that gives you the tools to manage your anxiety without having to quit your life, move to an island, and meditate for 10 hours a day. So this course is for you if you're somebody that constantly worries about what other people think of you. You hold yourself back from setting big goals because you're anxious and overwhelmed and unable to move forward with things. It's for you if you flop into bed every night exhausted by another anxious day, wishing you could just switch off and relax. It's for you if you don't speak up about things because you're nervous about getting it wrong or what people will say, whether they'll judge you. And it's for you if you've got a loud inner critic that puts you down all the time and stops you from doing the things that you want to do in your life. If this sounds like you, I'm here to help you change that. In this online course for anxiety, Your Calmer Self, I teach you the tools and techniques to become a calmer and more confident version of yourself. I use powerful hypnotherapy recordings and exercises from cognitive behavioral therapy, NLP, positive psychology, and more. If you'd like to live an anxiety-free life of confidence and calmness, come and take a look at my course at karma-you.com/program. So it's karma-you.com/program.
Yeah. And can you share a bit about what, you know, the things that you've learned that have helped you to cope? You mentioned before like a toolbox of things that you can kind of call on. Can you share what that is for you?
Yeah. Like I said a few minutes ago, I've always been someone who kind of had the teetering pile of books, you know, by my bed, the kind of, you know, self-help, you know, the kind of going way back, Louise Hay, affirmations, feel the fear and do it anyway, then moving on to sort of law of attraction, Abraham Hicks. I've always had a belief that in expansive thinking, you know, and knowing that through challenging circumstances, growth happens and wonderful things can come out of the darkest times. But I was very good at talking it and still not able to really connect. And I think there was a rock bottom. I sort of had a terrible mental sort of rock bottom a few years ago around the time of my honeymoon, and just joyless, you know, just absolutely joyless. And it was really hard for everyone around me to see me on paper well, but just it was completely paralyzing, the fear. And I've always sort of, you know, you hear about, oh, gratitude, practice gratitude, but it just started to kind of keep coming up, this idea of kind of looking at things from a different perspective. And I remember on my fridge, I bought a postcard and it said, replace anxiety with gratitude, or replace thoughts of anxiety with gratitude. And I had it on the fridge, and I just used to look at it, and it just gradually kind of, that was, I think, the kind of seed of change. So I kind of talk about, you know, kind of it started with thank you. So just this idea that I could be sitting in the hospital waiting room feeling absolutely terrified of my name being called, of a scan result, of a no caller ID, but almost just in a kind of, just by literally mumbling, thinking, saying thank you over and over again, you know, thank you for the chair, thank you for the water in my glass, thank you for the shoes on my feet, thank you for the ground beneath me, just however hard it felt to really, you know, just by saying it and just by finding a list, anything to focus on, it would bring me back to the now. It would inevitably diminish, take me away from those dark thoughts, even just for a moment. So that was like the kind of first step. And then gradually, again, through kind of, you know, the learning more about the kind of mind-body connection and really how incredibly powerful our thoughts are, realizing that I talk about kind of turning the volume down on the thoughts that don't serve us. So for me, the cancer dial was always an absolute kind of, you know, eardrum splitting top volume. That noise was loud and overwhelming all the time. And sort of this idea of how can I, if the cancer volume's at a 10, what thoughts can I think to turn it down to a 9, 8, 7, 6, whether that's just a distraction, whether it's saying thank you, whether it's consciously choosing to think about something, anything at all that gives me a feeling of ease, you know, and that kind of emotional guidance sort of system and the emotional scale. If you can't go from a place of desperate hopelessness to joy and elation, but you can go from despair and fear to a tiny chink of relief or a tiny feeling of, do you know what I mean? It's almost like pivoting up that kind of emotional scale. And that's what I've really become aware of, and I really consciously practice. And I don't always, you know, doesn't mean by any way that I never have those dark thoughts. The tapes are always running. But rather than that kind of boulder of the sort of cancer boulder or whatever it is that your struggle is, sort of being here and me taking it with me wherever I go and it blocking out the sun, it's almost like, right, how do I turn the volume down? I almost shrink this big black boulder down to something that's a little bit more manageable, and get, you know, it's all these kind of analogies, I guess.
Love that.
And the sort of, I mean, I've told this story a lot, but it was probably a top five life defining moment for me, which, yeah, you know, I have shared a lot, is on the day of my third diagnosis 2.5 years ago. And Jake, my eldest son, was 15 at this point. 2.5 years ago. And I got the phone call in the afternoon from the oncologist to say, yes, you know, the cancer had progressed again and this was the situation and this is what would need to happen. So my husband rushed home from work, my father and his wife, you know, rushed around the corner. So, and Jake, my son, unexpectedly walked in from school a little bit early to find us in the kitchen, me looking ashen, you know, my dad with sort of quiet tears streaming down his face, this kind of Black Monday, you know, this awful feeling of, oh my God, you know, and at that point we thought that I had a tumor on my lung. So it felt like a very, very dark, a dark day. And Jake was is a quite quiet boy. And at that point, even younger than he is now. And he just looked a bit stricken and just sat very quietly. So everyone else is talking and kind of, what are we doing? You know, and then I just looked at Jake and I said, come on, let's just go out for a walk. So we just walked to the common, which is round the corner, walked to the cafe, got him a hot chocolate. And I veered between kind of being very, you know, the parent, don't worry, darling, it's going to be okay. You know, this is what needs to happen. And I'm just going to have chemo again. And to, you know, voice cracking, emotion spilling over. And he just was very, very quiet all the way and just sort of nodding quietly, asking the odd question, but just really listening. And just as we got to the exit of the common, just before we headed back home, he said, Mum, you've just got to live like it's not there. And it was one of those moments that even every time I think of it, I sort of get goosebumps, because it was, without over dramatizing it, it was a huge moment for me. And it felt, I mean, it sort of stopped me in my tracks. And it felt as though those words had come from somewhere other than a 15-year-old boy, you know. And it was absolutely kind of, yeah, you're right. That's what I knew. I need to live like it's not there. And so this side, and that ties in with this feeling of, you know, we've all got an it, haven't we? We've all got something that is potentially the boulder that blocks out the sun or the noise that is at top volume. How do we find a way of living with the challenges without those challenges colouring every other aspect of our lives? So that was the kind of point where I just really took things to another level, I guess, of real determination and conviction to live as big and bold a life as I possibly can, despite the uncertainty. Around that time, I started running. I met a new friend who was passionate about running, and she sort of took me with her. And, you know, I'm running my second marathon in a few weeks, and very slowly, very, you know, unimpressively, but I'm doing it. And it's kind of, but for me, it's an amazing way of connecting with my physicality in a positive way. It reminds me that my body is strong and resilient and that I'm here, and it grounds me. And so I feel incredibly lucky that I've found some ways of managing a situation that's never going to be easy, because even if by a miracle I'm lucky enough to stay as well as I am now forever, I will still always be a cancer patient. I will never get that kind of day of, you know, I'll never get that guarantee. So it's, yeah, it's navigating life, I guess, in the best way for us as individuals.
Yeah, gosh, thank you for sharing that. Really powerful. And yeah, what you were saying about kind of turning down the dial on the volume of those thoughts, I really like that idea of almost kind of like visualizing that somehow. And you kind of, you made a movement as you were talking about this kind of making it older, almost like you're trying to make it smaller.
Exactly.
It's interesting, because actually, you know, I work as a hypnotherapist, and a lot of what we're doing is kind of using visualization to change things. It's amazing how that can work. You know, we can actually imagine turning down a dial, and those thoughts can quiet down. So I love that you shared that. And
it's so powerful. And actually, kind of just expanding slightly on that kind of idea is, again, around, you know, over the last couple of years when all these kind of thoughts have slotted together for me in a way that I really sort of practice and access as often as I need to and as often as I can, is the idea that, you know, we all say, it's easy to say, I don't want to be defined by whether it's my disease or my circumstances or this condition or that condition. But that's also helped me kind of really lessen the definition of being a cancer patient, as in, you know, I can look at my, or I can imagine my body from top to toe and think, okay, on paper, I have cancer. I'm a secondary breast cancer patient, but the top of my head doesn't have cancer. My toes don't have cancer. My smile will never have cancer. My eyes don't have cancer, you know, and it's, let alone my heart and my soul and my spirit. And, you know, when I was re-diagnosed 2.5 years ago, I could think, okay, there's the cancers here. There's some cancer here and there's some cancer there. But look at all the other parts of me. And scientifically, that might not be accurate, because an oncologist might say, well, actually, the cells are all, but you know, from a kind of using it as a tool point of view, if I can look at my arms and my elbows and my knees and my thighs and think they are cancer free, again, it just helps minimize, you know, it just helps minimize the impact.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. That's interesting. Someone, I saw someone the other day, and they say they, you know, they're feeling anxious, but you know what? The tip of my nose isn't anxious. You know, my fingers aren't anxious. You know, my toenails aren't anxious. And you can use it for kind of anything, really, to just remember that it's not this all-consuming thing. It is quite a contained thing, really. And we can just, I love that idea of just shifting your mindset in that way.
Yeah. But it's not, you know, again, it's like it took a decade, you know. I'm so aware as well that it's, if you're reeling from a new diagnosis, if you're reeling from, you know, I've had a decade to kind of, it's also part of a process, isn't it? I've had to find a way of living with it. So, you know, I would never say to someone who's reeling from an initial diagnosis, I mean, I could share some of what helps me, but you've also got to go through those different phases and find your way, you know.
Yeah, I think that's important to say, isn't it? Because we often don't, you know, understandably, no one wants to feel bad. No one wants to feel anxious or scared or negative feelings. Mm. And we kind of almost, I think, sometimes make ourselves wrong for feeling that. Like, we should be able to deal with stuff. Like, I should be able to cope, or it's not okay that I'm feeling this. Or we try different techniques to try and make ourselves feel better, and if they don't work, we might feel like we're a failure, we're not doing it well enough. But actually, do you think there is just a part of, like, sometimes we just have to go through stuff, like we have to go through those big feelings?
I think so, and it's like sometimes I veer between kind of, you know, I've had lots of therapy in the past, but I think more and more, I think you can't kind of, you can't leapfrog. You know, I'm not great, as much as I sort of, I feel like I work on myself, I'm not great at sitting with uncomfortable feelings. You know, I don't find it easy at all. I just want them to stop. So, you know, even now recently, you know, it's been quite a challenging patch, you know, for other reasons. And I just really struggle with that discomfort, whereas someone else might find that, they might find that easier to cope with, or they just trust it more or surrender to it. But I think we have to allow that things to unfold. But I think there's a balance between allowing things to unfold and also just being mindful of not getting stuck in a limiting belief, you know. And so I think more and more now I'm recognizing that, you know, the trauma that I've experienced has dictated a lot of my reactions today. So, like, you know, all of anyone who's waited for a hospital call, the no caller ID. The no caller ID is a trauma, because in the past, that no caller ID has given me bad news. So that was a snapshot. That's what, you know, that's why, of course, I react the way I do now. It's bringing ourselves back to the understanding that we're reacting that way based on what we've been through. But actually, maybe our reality right now calls for a gentler reaction, if we can. It's a work in progress, isn't it? Because there's no point where you think, well, I've got, God, I'm stumbling and learning as I go and tripping up and, you know, head in my hands one minute and flying high the next. But I think, and again, that's what's so incredible about all of these conversations, that we all just open up to each other and share our vulnerabilities and our growth and our stuckness and our expansion, but we can all just, you know, take little bits from each other, I think.
Definitely. And I think it can be so easy to look at someone else that's going through something, maybe the same thing as you or something different, and to kind of assume that they're handling it, that they're like, it's neat and contained and tidy.
Yeah.
We're a complete mess and like, oh,
I know. Actually, I know.
It's just not the case.
It's never that.
Yeah.
It's never that.
Yeah. And also,
but I'm always,
Sorry.
Sorry.
I was going to say, we can't know how someone is handling it. It's like you can't be inside someone else's nervous system and know exactly, like they may look totally okay and calm and together, and actually inside it's like very, you know,
my goodness,
they're going through it.
I know.
So
I know, and that's why I think it is so important to share. If you are, there's no obligation to share anything, but if for those of us who are quite comfortable with sharing the nitty-gritty, I think it's so important to share all of the colours, the shades of it all. Mm. Because I'm very aware as well that, you know, I do post a lot about running, and I run a lot because it helps me so much mentally. And I'm also very, very aware that I'm in a place where I can run. I've, you know, that I'm well enough and strong enough to run. But I'm acutely aware of how hard that must be for someone else who isn't currently able to make their body work for them in that way. So, but I think we just have to also not shrink ourselves as well. Just, you know, because I'm well enough to be running, I have to remind myself that I don't have to play that down either. You know, again, because we're all just where we're at, and we're all just doing our best.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. What about in terms of, like, since COVID times, you know, how have you kind of managed the changes and the challenges that that's kind of brought up?
I think, like many of us, I think at the beginning we all kind of almost felt the relief of being able to not, of the expectations disappearing, of having to be at home. And I felt as that from a parental point of view, there'd been so many years of me not feeling present with the kids mainly because of anxiety. You know, you can't be present in the moment when you're convinced that something's bubbling away that's going to kill you, you know, however irrational that might be in that moment. And I know that that's affected those thoughts have affected my parenting in a way that I feel really sad about, and I struggle still with guilt about that. But so at the beginning of lockdown last year, it was, wow, we're actually all together, and I surrendered to it. And then of course the reality, and you know, wore off very quickly, and it was a challenge. I sort of realized again, like I think lots of us have, that I'm quite introverted, and I really love my own company. I need my own company, and I need my own time, and I need silence, and I need to be alone, and I need to be able to shut myself away. And if I very quickly sort of become depleted if I feel like I don't have any headspace. So that's kind of, yeah. So there was those just craving solitude and silence, but also at the same time, knowing that the fact that we were all together and safe and well was also something to cherish, you know. Yeah, and I think, like, again, I think lots of us are feeling like the world has opened up again, but I think most of us have stepped into it a lot less. You know, there's a lot of things that we haven't picked up again. You know, and it feels a bit easier to say no. I feel like I don't want to go out as much as I used to, not because I'm scared of catching COVID, but more don't need to, or I don't need to, you know, I like home. I actually really like being at home.
Yeah, I think, it's been interesting for the introverts. I think some people have found that, like, not having to go places has, been a relief in some ways, or not having to be around people so much has been a bit of a relief. Yeah. And I know it is difficult for those who, you know, and then getting invited to things again and maybe don't want to go back to kind of their life before, or don't want to.
I know.
Or it's triggered sort of social anxieties.
Yeah,
or something like
definitely.
That.
I think, and confidence, I feel, and my husband and I have talked about this. We both struggled this year as things were slowly getting back to normal, kind of ish. And we both had real low periods in the last few months, probably more so than last year. I think loss of, a bit of confidence crisis or identity, or questioning things, you know. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's been a real feeling of energetically of, oh, things feeling quite tough, and maybe not even quite able to put your finger on it, but just maybe it's like a residual kind. We've all just been through something so enormous. It's hard to articulate in a way. It's, you know, so I think, and we're probably, we're still, I don't think we still really get it and probably haven't begun to process what it's really been like and the effects.
Yeah, there's so many different factors, you know, whether it's, you know, health things or financial things or people losing jobs and parenting and all those things just getting very intense. So yeah, so much, but yeah, thank you for sharing that. I suppose, just lastly, as a final kind of question, is there anything else that you want people to know listening, any other kind of message that you have for people that you wanted to share lastly?
I think the probably reiterating that the feeling that it's a really passionate belief that the thoughts we think and the words that we use and where we place our energy is so incredibly powerful and has such an impact on how our life unfolds. And that doesn't, you know, and again, I sort of hold back sometimes because I know that I'm sitting here saying that and I'm not in a hospital bed at the moment. I'm not in a, you know, and, but I think I do still feel that whatever unfolds for me, however critical things might get, however unwell I may be at some point, I still know that I will, however much despair I might feel in the future, I still know and I'm convinced that I will still find a way of accessing the belief that I can control my, I can choose to think the thoughts that offer a feeling of ease and relief and really allow myself to think about the life I want and the vision, a vision of the future that I want to step into. And really that we can make change and that anything is possible. And it's really important that we don't allow ourselves to be defined by a diagnosis or a label or a condition, that we realize that we're bigger than all of that. And, you know, I refuse to, you know, I'm sort of passionate and proud to be part of the cancer community in a way. And, but I will never put in a bio, and this is no judgment for me personally, I will never put, you know, incurable cancer in my, even though I'm a stage 4 secondary breast cancer patient, not just for my own personal reason that that doesn't help me. It doesn't help me because, okay, maybe that is absolutely true. And I'm sure on paper it is, but it doesn't serve me in any way to attach myself to that. Because, yeah, and I'm just passionate as the more I understand in my very ill-educated way about the power of the mind and the power of our thoughts and being disciplined with our thoughts, you know, and expanding on what is working in our lives and pivoting away from what isn't, you know, I think, living like it's not there.
Yeah, so beautiful. Thank you. I feel very inspired talking to you. And
thank you.
Yeah, just your energy and your, the, you know, what you've shared, I think it gives a lot of hope. I think whether people have been through what you've been through or are worried about things in the future, I think so much of anxiety is worrying about things in the future, and just knowing that, you know, there are things that we can do to still find positivity and gratitude and, you know, working on keeping our thoughts, you know, and our vision for the future. I think it's just really inspiring. So
Yeah,
thank you so much for everything you shared. So
thank
amazing.
You so much for having me. It's been a lovely chat. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And where can people find out more about you and your work? And I know you do writing workshops and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously, Instagram's a fairly easy way to find me. LimitlessM on Instagram, on my website, limitlessm.com. I speak, I do a lot of speaking work, and I'm working very slowly on book number 2. And alongside that, in recent months, I've begun holding some virtual expressive writing workshops, which are really lovely, gentle, safe, supportive sort of sessions where we just get the words out on the page. You know, that kind of stream of consciousness, no rules other than keeping the pen moving. And they're proving to be amazing for really unearthing, you know, memories, sort of inspiration, wisdom, creativity, and just kind of connecting with ourselves in a really lovely way. So, yeah, but it's all on my, you know, Instagram bio and website. And yeah, I'm very much around and about, visible most days, chatting on stories.
it's great. Yeah, well, thank you so much for everything you share. It's been great to chat. Thank you
Chloe. Thank you, and I'll speak to you again soon.
You have been listening to the Karma You podcast with me, Chloe Bretheridge. Don't forget, you can download loads of freebies for anxiety and confidence at my website, karmayou.com. You can also find out about my app and my one-on-one sessions. Please do subscribe to this podcast in the Apple Podcast app. And if you have enjoyed it or found it helpful, please leave me a review. It makes a massive difference to helping the podcast get discovered by other people. And come on over and find me on Instagram. I'm hanging out there every day. You can find me at Chloe Bretheridge. Let me know what you thought of this episode. And please do share it with anyone who might need to hear this today. So I'm sending you loads of love, and I hope you have a brilliant week ahead.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.